flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, Frank Lee, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 174. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're getting your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Subscribe, please. Just like multiple platforms. It helps us out so much when you guys subscribe. And we really appreciate that our subscriber count keeps growing. People love the podcast. The feedback has continued to be just awesome. So we really appreciate you guys. You can also find us on YouTube on the WEEI page. We've got the Play Tessie playlist there. It has all of our episodes in video form. So you can find us there. Hit the thumbs up on the video if you're watching there. And you can find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Find some great clips there. So it's a two-man show today. Here with Sammy, it's Gordo. Sammy, not on the last podcast. So you missed some hole plugging talk. You missed some bidet discussion. You missed. We're gonna have to get your take on the sleeping arrangement. Do you want to comment on your bidet take before we get into the sleeping arrangements?
Yeah, everyone should have a bidet. It is the best thing ever. I don't know how you have never really. Did you never try one, or you've just never had the or you don't like it?
I have had opportunities to use them if I've wanted to, and I have turned it down every single time.
Wow. Okay. I think you'll come around if you give it a try. You're also saving the environment with the amount of toilet paper you save. So think about that.
I respect that. I respect that it saves the environment.
I am in Gordo's camp, and I've never used a bidet either. Never even heard of it.
So this is great.
What?
This is great because
I'll tell you that I heard it once for an ad read for a podcast I was listening to, but I had no idea what it was.
Okay, well, Joe, it basically sprays water up your butt. That's That's what we're doing here. That's
how I found out.
That's
what
Sammy and Bradford want to do.
That's not what it does.
What does it do then?
It cleans you after you use the toilet. It cleans you. It's very hygienic.
By doing what?
Spraying water, not up your, you know what? It cleans you.
Well,
on it.
What?
Not up it. Hygienic. It's great.
Hold on. It might be vulgar for the first 5 minutes of this podcast, but we really do have to get into it. When you're finishing up on the toilet, like, you're not just like tapping your cheeks, like you're digging into the good stuff.
No, you still have to use toilet paper, but this is just a much more hygienic, more environmentally friendly.
You're still using toilet paper?
You use like a third of the amount. You use way less.
Oh my God. I like this even less. So I still have to use the toilet paper.
Yeah, dude. Have you been to Europe?
Yes.
Where'd you go in Europe?
France and Italy.
France! The home of the bidet. You never
used
one?
Nope. And I've been to France multiple times, too. I don't know if bidets were have they been popular for a long time?
Dude, they're extremely old. They've been around forever. Hold on.
Older than you?
Oh, yeah. How old is a bidet?
How old is a bidet?
18th century France, dude.
Okay. Yeah, they're so older than Sammy. I've been to France multiple times. I've been to Italy. And every stop, every time I went to the bathroom, there was toilet paper for me to use, and I used it.
Right, but they probably have to refill it very infrequently because there's bidets.
Okay.
But mostly. Not every toilet there has a bidet. Imagine if you're a first-time Playtessie listener and you're like expecting Red Sox talk and we're just going right into bidets.
Yeah, you needed to listen to the last episode for this conversation to make any sense. And for the next part of it, before we get into the Red Sox talk, we put the poll on Twitter asking people where Pat should sleep in spring training. And overwhelmingly, people suggested that he be sleeping on the floor and not with either of us or on the couch by himself. He said he's a good floor sleeper. I mean, I'm fine with it if he wants to do it.
I don't care as long as I get the guest bedroom and my privacy and the full bed. I'm such a bad sleeper, dude.
You're asking for a lot there. You're asking for the best sleeping arrangement and by yourself. You're asking for the two things.
I'll buy you guys both a round of drinks just if I could have that one bed. If I'm traveling for work and it's a hotel room, that's fine. But if I have to sleep at my friend's house, like last night, we're recording, or 2 nights ago, excuse me, I was in Maine sleeping on my friend's couch. I was just staring at the ceiling. I could not fall asleep. I'm not in my own bed.
I don't like couches either. I don't know how people do that. I honestly think I sleep better on floor than couch. I just don't think there's enough space. I need to like spread out.
Yeah. I have to be in my own bed, or for some reason, hotel beds I get a really good sleep in as well. So I have two options. And the hotel bed is fairly similar to the Airbnb bed in Fort Myers, so I can do that. But yeah, I owe you guys drinks.
All right. I'm curious. I'm curious if Pat's going to listen to the because ultimately the decision is technically his. I think it should be the listener's decision. I think he should be banished to the floor. I think we should put like caution tape around the couch. He's not allowed to sleep on it.
Last time I slept on the floor, I slept on the floor when I was in high school. It was like 2009. I was sleeping on the floor and my friend Eli was sleeping on the couch. And Eli is 6'9" and weighs as much as the guy who's 6'9" weighs, and he rolled over, fell on top of me at like 3:30 in the morning, and that was awful, having this giant person fall on top of me, and I have not slept on the floor since then. True story.
I don't think I've slept on the floor since winter weekend when Coop and Pat had the bed, and so I took the floor near the outlet. This is the infamous outlet floor sleep that Rob always brings up. But yeah, He's gonna have to get himself out of it if he doesn't want to sleep on the floor. Because I'm gonna be pushing it, man. The listeners have spoken. Like he's gonna be on the floor as far as I'm concerned. But we're 7 minutes into this. We should talk some socks.
White Sox look good. I saw Kyle Teal at White Sox Fest.
New mustache.
It's Rate Field for the White Sox, and that's the show. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Yep. We'll see. We'll see you on Friday for who says no. No. You weren't here to talk Bregman, Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
There, since we last recorded, I guess the only new stuff is that the Astros 6 years, 156 is reportedly not going to get it done. And they're maybe interested in Jorge Polanco too, but part of me thinks that that's just kind of a big leverage play. Like, I found it weird that they would, because if they sign Bregman, they're going to move Paredes to second and Altuve to left field. So really the position they're filling is left field. So why would they not just express interest in a left fielder if that were the case? Though Altuve, I think, was not a good defender at second last year. So maybe part of it is actually like wanting to move him off second as opposed to being like, yeah, like if I have to, maybe it's like, oh, actually, we would like you to move off a second. I don't know. But Sammy, I'll give you the floor. Give me, you open it up. Anything, Bregman, right-handed bat, whatever you're thinking, because you haven't given a take on this in some time, at least on this show.
Yeah, honestly, ever since I heard the Astros' six-year offer is back on the table and that it's possibly not even enough, I've slowly started to mentally distance myself from Alex Bregman. That doesn't mean I've completely given up hope, but I know there's always a chance that we get that rogue Jeff Passan notification and Bregman comes to Boston, but with the Red Sox not even wanting to go 5 years, Astros already have six on the table. I think the AAV is a slightly less important because he's making life-changing money either way. I think he really, at age 31, would value those years. So I just can't foresee the Red Sox having a dramatic change of heart, like a departure from the way they've been operating for the last, 5 years, and giving Bregman 5 years, let alone six or seven. So I think he's the best fit out of anyone on the market. Checks all the boxes, plays good defense. You could put him at second, put him at third. Right-handed bat. Has good career numbers against lefties. I see a lot of people saying he didn't hit lefties well last year. If you look at it month by month, he got off to an ice-cold start, and then June to October, he destroyed lefties. So I'm not too worried about
and
that.
And he hit lefties his whole career pretty much up until, I think it's the last 2 years. The splits don't look that great, but then you referenced why last year maybe like you should look a little bit deeper than the just full season. So it's basically, I mean, for the most part in his career, he has hit lefties.
Yeah, 862 OPS against lefties. I got that off the top of my head because I've been looking so much into Alex Bregman. I'm sick of thinking about this guy as much as I want him to sign for the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. But checks those two boxes. He's a leader, something that we've heard from people around the Red Sox. They need something they're lacking. There's guys who have tried, but, you know, it's hard to be a leader for a guy like Trevor Story, who, you know, conceivably could be the leader, but he's hurt, so he's not on the field all the time. You have guys like, you know, veterans, Liam Hendricks, or last year you had Kenley, but they're in the bullpen, so tough to be a leader. Starting pitchers, you're playing once every 5 days. It's just tough. You really need a guy who's on the field every day. He checks that box. He helps with the strikeout issue. Red Sox had a ton of strikeouts last year. He does not strike out very often. And then what Rob said, I like what Rob said, the business of baseball. You know, little kids coming to Fenway, they're not excited to say, hey, this is the 10th best prospect in baseball. And then they say, is he good? And, you know, their parent goes, he might be someday. And the kid's like, okay. They want to see, oh, this guy's a three-time All-Star, a World Series champion. He's really good. The Red Sox just got this guy from Houston, and now he's ours. How exciting is that? That attracts young fans. That attracts, you know, casual fans as well. It's not just the kids. It's the people who are kind of following the Red Sox who are on the fence. So the 10 boxes, as Rob put it, I think he checks them all. It's unfortunate the Red Sox, who claimed to be ready to get uncomfortable, they seem cozy, cozy, cozy in their blankets, getting anything but uncomfortable. And been that way for about 5 years now.
See, I can appreciate, I think the last, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 days, you've seen some of the people who either they've been closeted semi against Alex Bregman, or they're trying to figure out why the Red Sox may not be super sold on going long term for Bregman, and they're kind of selling themselves on that stance too as a result. But like, so I can appreciate the people who pull out the Christian Campbell projections and say, if this guy's already, I mean, I think he's basically in. And then this one came out on Sox Prospects. That's where I heard it. In basically in projections from some of the stat websites, it's like in 90 games, he's projected to be like a 1.5 to 2 win player, which means basically like in a full season, he'd be like a 4 win player, which is Bregman. Basically, yeah, it's Bregman. That's so like one. In theory, it's like, okay, why would you sign Bregman if you can just get that production from Christian Campbell, who, as Alex Speer reported, a lot of people in the organization think should start in the big league opening day lineup. My response to that is that I don't think Alex Bregman blocks Campbell. And if not Bregman, then what veteran are you bringing in? Because they do need one. They do need another right-handed hitter. They've said it all offseason. Like, yeah. I don't, whether it be.
Who hits third against lefties right now? It's Ref Snyder or Story.
No, yeah, you said it right there. I think it's literally Ref Snyder. And we like Rob Ref Snyder against lefties. I like Romy Gonzalez against lefties. I think Vaughn Grissom has a chance to hit lefties. I think Christian Campbell has a chance to hit lefties. There's a lot. Trevor Story has a chance to hit lefties. There's a lot of guys on the team that have a chance to hit lefties. And if they signed a guy like Randall Grichuk, he'd probably hit lefties pretty well. But again, we saw how the double platoon thing worked last year. And if you sign Grichuk, that's what it's going to be. Because Ref Snyder's platooning with Abreu, and if you get Grichuk in there, he's going to be platooning with someone else, presumably Yoshida. I don't know. Like, it depends on how you want to go about it, but you're having multiple platoons, which we've talked about it a lot, requires, like, let's say you face a right-handed starter. He goes 5 innings. In the 6th inning, the lefty reliever comes in. You pinch hit with Ref Snyder and Romy and Grichuk, and those guys hit against the lefty. And the Sox are down 4-2, and they make it 4-3. Now the 9th inning comes around. The lights out closer comes in. It's 4-3. He's a righty. You've got those three guys I just mentioned up, and now there's no one else to pinch hit, and those guys don't hit righties well. I suppose Grichuk hit them a little bit last year, but in his career, like I don't expect him to repeat an 800 OPS against righties next year. So there are problems going into the year without that certainty against left-handed pitching. There's problems going into the year without certainty of guys who don't swing and miss. And when I look at these negotiations and I look back at what's going on with the Astros, I can't help but think that there's something that we're missing. Because if there are three teams that have 5+ year deals on the table, there was that report, I think from Heyman, where it was like one of them's a 6-year deal, but has an opt out after the first year, which makes me think that contract's wonky as hell. And like, maybe it's like, worth nothing in the first year, and then it's an opt-out. It's like, why would I take that? But if the Astros have a 6-year, $156 million offer on the table, I have to wonder why he hasn't taken it, because I don't think that there's a team that's going to top that. I don't think that there's a team that's going to go 7 years, and I don't think the Astros are dumb enough to bid against themselves and go into that territory when it seems like he doesn't want to go to the Blue Jays. It seems like he doesn't want to go to the Tigers. The Cubs certainly aren't offering anything beyond short term. And even at this point, they've now added even more salary. So it might get even more difficult. And with the Red Sox at 4 years, it's just, I don't know why the Astros would go higher. So maybe the Astros' current offer has a crazy amount of deferred money. And there are some stipulations in there that actually, like the 6-156 has been leaked from the Astros. We know that they've commented on it publicly, but that doesn't mean that it's a true straight up 6 years, 156. Like it could be like, only 40 of it is paid in present day, and like the rest of it is paid out way down the line, which present day value could make it as low as like what, 6 years, 115. And it's like, okay, like he's not going to take that, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, it could be something like that. There's something that we don't know.
There's also the chance that he doesn't really believe in the Astros long term. Like they've gotten worse. They just lost Kyle Tucker, and they have a really weak farm system compared to the other teams in the league. So that could be part of it. He could just want a change of scenery. There's always guys like that who don't want to spend their whole career in one place because they're thinking they're missing out on something else or just seeing what it's like to be a ball player in a different city. I know you and Rob don't agree, but I think there's still some sort of appeal to playing at Fenway. Not like it used to be for sure, but you know, Fenway Park is always Fenway Park. You never know, man. I mean, I agree with you. There has to be something we're missing because 6-156 for a 31-year-old.
Oh, it's a great offer. It's a great offer.
How do you turn that down?
And like, it's one thing to turn it down if there's another team that you know he'd be interested. Like, if the Red Sox were at 6 years and they're both at 6 years, then it's like, okay, like, I understand being hesitant. I do push back a little bit on the possibility that maybe he doesn't want to be there as much as we think. Because, like, I mean, his career has been nothing but spectacular. He's built a legacy there. He's built a family there. It's close to where he was born in New Mexico. I mean, granted, there's a chance that, like, for instance, Dana Brown, the Astros GM, talked about today as we record when they just finalized the Presley deal. He said, yeah, we signed Josh Hader and my relationship with Presley was never the same. Like, it just wasn't. So maybe there's something we don't know and there's some sort of relationship that went awry. I know Bob Nightingale has reported that Bregman expressed significant interest in a return recently, and that's why they've re-engaged. I know what you'll say to that is, obviously he's going to say that because they want the big offer on the table regardless, and I think that's valid. So I agree you shouldn't necessarily read into that like it's gospel, but I just logically I can't see a reason why he would want to leave Houston. But again, like I said, there's a reason that he hasn't accepted that offer yet. Like,
Houston also a great ballpark for him. So yep, maybe and I'm the looking best. At the top 100 prospects right now. Astros literally have zero. So that might be it. We might like slightly beyond to something with, like, he doesn't see them having a bright future. They just gave a 3-year deal to Christian Walker, who's 33 and probably going to start declining soon. Like, he's all right. Paredes, you know, good
25
player.
Shockingly only 25. That's stunning.
Yeah. That is odd.
Then there's the Altuve thing. Like, they're maybe just like straight up interested in moving him to left field as opposed to like him doing it by necessity. Like,
yeah,
he's 35. No, you're right. They're not super well built for the future. And if they sign him, you know that Framber Valdez is walking next year.
Yeah.
But again, like, there is something to be said about finishing your career with one team, building a legacy there. Like, the truth is, you go to Houston, you go to those Astros games, there's maybe three jerseys walking around: Altuve, Bregman, Alvarez. Mm-hmm. If you go to Fenway, like, it's just the people here don't have the same relationship with Bregman if he comes here. It would take something. Like, he's won two championships there. Like, he's got a legacy there.
They have. I mean, I'm looking at their team right now. Like, Framber's good, but expiring deal. Hunter Brown, more good than bad. Ronel Blanco kind of came out of nowhere. Who knows? Arrigetti, good but not great pitching prospect. Luis Garcia dances a lot. Lance McCullers, his elbows, like, exploded.
Twice, JP three France. Times, four times. JP yeah, France stinks.
Christian Javier hurt right now.
They've got pitching depth, closer. But it's all hurt.
Yeah, expensive closer, Josh Hader, who's not been as good as he normally is. The bullpen actually isn't even looking that great. Caleb Ort is like their third best arm. I know he had a good season, but
I don't know. Maybe
this is it. Maybe he just doesn't believe in the future. And he's like, look, I can't be 2019 Alex Bregman anymore. I'm 31 years old. I'm still good, but I'm not a superstar anymore. I can't carry these guys. I need a good team around me now. And it's a lot more appealing to hit between Devers and Casas than it is to hit between Altuve and Yordan. Who knows? This is the most positive possible spin. No, I do not think that the Red Sox are going to get Alex Bregman on a 4-year deal. I'm just praying maybe they compromise 5 years and then a mutual option, which is like a fake year, basically. Something. Red Sox.
It's entirely possible that he won't necessarily give Houston the hometown discount over another team that he sees as like a favorable destination, whether it be the Red Sox or the Cubs are the two that come to mind. I know that the Mets are now reportedly out, according to Ari Alexander, who has been way on top of all of this Bregman stuff. Like, he's the go-to guy for these reports, and he is not missed. Him and Chandler Rome, I think, have been kind of the two dudes on top of everything here. But I don't think he's going to take a discount to leave Houston. I think you're going to have to beat them in present-day value, and you're going to have to account for the state income tax, which obviously super beneficial to play in the state of Texas for that. But if you beat them in terms of present day take home value, yes, like I'm open to the possibility that Bregman would leave the Astros for a small bump in salary over what they're offering. I don't think he would take less. And is it even worth talking about? Because the Sox, as it stands today, aren't even close. They're not even close.
I wonder if, like, maybe you can give him a huge signing bonus, because that doesn't affect the luxury tax.
No, it does. Maybe. It gets spread out. But what it doesn't affect is
signing
the tax.
Bonus?
It does. It does impact the luxury tax. What it helps is that it wouldn't be taxed in Massachusetts. So if he has residence in Texas, then you could give him that signing. But is John Henry willing to do that? That's a lot of upfront money. And this
Wait,
is
so
a
if
guy.
You give a guy a signing bonus, it affects like on top of the contract. Like you give him who just got that?
Taylor Dodgers, or Tanner Scott. Someone.
Tanner Scott. Yeah. Tanner Scott got a big like $15 million extra dollars. I don't think
that's the dodge. It does touch the tax. It the purpose of it is because California has high taxes. So if Tanner Scott still has residence in Florida, like otherwise, dude, like people would just pay the whole thing in a signing bonus and then not give them any salary.
4-year deal, $20 million signing bonus, 72 guaranteed, an average annual salary of $18 million. This is weird.
$18 million times 4 is 72.
No, but it has the luxury tax. It says 15, and then maybe 18 in the last year.
That's accounting for the deferred money. So the deferred money gets like recalculated to present-day value. That's why it's such a cheat code. That's why they have to change it.
Dude, baseball is so confusing with the luxury tax. Like, how does any casual fan follow this? Like, I didn't even know that until just now, and we do a friggin' podcast about it.
They don't follow it, and it's...
How many people know that a signing bonus is also calculated into the luxury tax, but it's based on the state that you're in when you
receive it?
Like, that's insanely convoluted. My God. But yeah, I don't think they're going to get Bregman anyway. Back to that. It's disappointing. It's the same thing we've seen for years now. So I wish I was surprised. I kind of do. I wish I was more pissed off and surprised, but I'm kind of just numb to it at this point.
Yeah, it's tough because I'm not as pissed. Like I am upset about it. I'm upset about how they're approaching it. I'm upset that they haven't gotten uncomfortable financially in the way that they said they would. I'm upset about the timeline of them acknowledging the hole that needs to be plugged, the Tyler O'Neill hole that Pat rightfully says is just begging to be plugged.
Oh yeah, needs to be plugged. It's wide open right now,
and they're just leaving it wide open. Like you could freaking like the breeze through that hole is just ridiculous.
Drive a truck through that hole.
Oh my.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
God, yeah, it's just worn out.
And you know what sucks? It's not just the free agents. It's like the trade options. There's like who would they trade for? I don't think Seiya Suzuki's even possible because the Cubs.
I don't think any of them are possible.
Tucker is on a 1-year deal. I don't think the Cubs are going to get a stud player on a 1-year deal and then trade Seiya Suzuki. Like, what are you doing? You're going for it, but not going for it? That would make no sense. Luis Robert, whatever, had an awful season. So the White Sox would be selling low on a guy who we've seen be a superstar before, and he's only 27 years old. So that makes no sense. Who else is there? You can try to get a catcher, Herrera, but that's not a middle of the order.
I'll give you the third. Guy. It's Carlos Correa, but the truth is the only argument there for why he would get moved is if they're trying to clear salary. But and I know the Twins haven't spent a dime, but they haven't been aggressively shopping guys to clear salary. I think people have talked a little bit about if Pablo Lopez is available, but like the Twins certainly do not appear to be shopping their big contract guys. Like there've been some Christian Vasquez discussion. Yeah, like I don't.
They're just chilling.
It really does feel like if it's not Bregman, and like I'm not in the camp that thinks Pete Alonso is a fit here.
No.
If it's not Bregman, it's like, okay, like, wow. Really, like, unless you pull a trade out of your ass that none of us see coming, like, it's going to be. And, like, Austin Hayes just went off the market, so I was going to say Grichuk or Hayes, but now what is it? Grichuk or what? Adam Duvall? Like, are we going back there?
I mean, you know what sucks?
That's what we're doing?
You know what stinks is Paredes would be perfect for the Red Sox, but he's not. He just got acquired by the Astros, who we were just speaking about. He plays first base, second base, third base, left field. He's DH before. He's right-handed.
The spray chart is ridiculous.
Spray chart is like pull, 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 pull. So very Fenway and also very Houston. But like I said, the Astros just acquired him. He hasn't played a single game for him, so that's not going to happen. I just don't know. Yandy Diaz, Pat's old idea, that kind of hamstrings Cora and what he can do. That's a corner infielder who's terrible at both corners, more of a DH.
And the Rays are reportedly not trying to trade him or Brandon Lau. So it may not even – like that's – it's tough because like a lot of these guys that we like and that we think logically maybe could be candidates to move, like most of the time the teams don't want to move these guys. Like we do Who Says No all the time. But the truth is oftentimes like we'll put something out there like, yeah, the teams probably both say no because the team with the veteran likes the veteran and wants to win. And the team that's trading the prospects often is really attached to those prospects. It's hard. That's why free agency is the easiest path.
Go nuts for a catcher. Trade crazy, crazy amounts for a catcher.
Like who, though?
William Contreras.
I mean, yeah, if they would trade him. I don't think they would, but if they would, yeah. You could go.
That's so frustrating that they wouldn't. Like their number one prospect or number two prospect is a catcher. And he's Major League ready. Like, why would the Brewers not at least consider, like, trading from a...
They just won the division. They just won the division. They're a good team.
Trade Cuero, then. I'll take the prospect. Give me that guy. Yeah. He's ready to start. He's 70-grade defense. You can have Connor Wong and Willy Abreu and Cutter Crawford. There you go.
More likely, though, the way they've operated is either trade your guy the year before he hits free agency or run it into the ground. Based off of when Cuero's going to come up, Contreras has 3 years left. I think they'd probably run him out there for two more years and then trade him right before his walk year. And obviously the Sox are going to have to figure out the catcher position before that. And Cal Raleigh's the other one. He's got 3 years and there's also another catching prospect behind him. I think the Mariners probably just run Cal Raleigh into the ground and he hits free agency and leaves. Got to figure something else out before then.
Yeah, he's even tougher to get because if they trade him, they would not have a catcher because Harry Ford's a year or two away still. So they would have to get another one, and they think they're going to contend, I bet, which is...
I think they're going to contend. I always believe. If you have the best starting rotation in baseball, I will always believe in you. I know they have proven me wrong every year, but...
I'm starting to think the Mariners don't... Did you read that article about the ballpark and the splits, like how dramatic it is for everyone?
Well, yes, yes, yes. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Pretty bad.
If you're going by pure talent, yeah, I'd probably argue that like the Phillies haven't beat because the Phillies play in a much hitter-friendlier ballpark and they produce and they just got even better. Dodgers.
Hey, Red Sox look pretty good, man. Not the best in the league, but, you know, Crochet, Hauk, Mueller, Bayo.
Well, speaking of Crochet, question for you. What would you give the grade for the offseason if they got the right-handed bat that they acquire is like someone pretty low level. Let's aim like the lowest level and just say Adam Duvall. And they grab
Adam Duvall.
I know the lowest level. Like literally like it's like
just
like,
don't sign anyone at that point. Just let the that point I'd say let the kids play.
Okay, whatever. Let's say they don't sign anyone.
Grichuk.
No, because you could sell yourself on Grichuk. I want it to be a guy you can't sell yourself on.
But nobody.
Yeah, we'll say nobody. And they get a bullpen arm, but it's not one of the ones that we've been talking about. So it's not Robertson, it's not Canley, and it's not Estevez. It's Lucas Sims. Let's say they get Lucas Sims back. Lucas Sims, no bat signing, but they extend Garrett Crochet. What is your? I don't even want to say grade. What's your reaction to the offseason if that's what happens?
My reaction, I would probably say I feel really good about the future, a little disappointed about 2025. I think they'll win 85 games, maybe make the playoffs, but I'd be disappointed because, you know, the entire season, every game I'd watch, every series we'd watch, in the back of my mind, I would just keep hearing, oh, they could have been a little bit better than this. They could have been better if they just added this bat. they could have been better. If they added David Robertson instead of Lucas Sims, the bullpen would have been better. If they just were a little more aggressive, like, that would just be in the back of my mind. So the grade, if they extend Crochet, I think I'd give them C+.
All right, that's, yeah. The grade thing is tough with that, because going into the offseason, we had these high hopes of, like, wow, they said 90 to 95 wins. They said they were going to consider going into the luxury tax. So they said they said definitively that payroll was going to go up, which it hasn't to this point. And I guess if you extend Crochet and start the extension early, technically the payroll, I think, would go up. So maybe they would make good on that promise by doing that. But what I will say is, at least if you extend Garrett Crochet, you haven't invested long-term in any, you know, 30-year-old players or anything. You would see what you've got in the prospects, and you're not wasting Garrett Crochet because you've got him extended. So, like, you could make the argument that, like, all right, they're continuing on the direction that they set forth 5 years ago when they wanted to rebuild, and they're not abandoning that rebuild. They just exchanged their prospects for a young stud pitcher who they then turned into a controllable stud pitcher. That said, I still, like, I declared on Twitter that if they don't get Bregman or don't get a good right-handed bat, I should say, because, like, Suzuki counts, Correa counts, Robert counts. If they don't get that, then it's the worst case scenario offseason, because they invested all this prospect capital to get Garrett Crochet, and you're going to burn half of his service time remaining with you on a waste year because you didn't go all in. But if you extend Crochet, that kind of goes out the window. And it's like, okay, like, you probably should have done more. You probably should have tried to compete. Maybe you still will compete, but at least you could say that there's direction.
If you look back to before the offseason, we all agreed priority number one was get an ace, and they did that. So if they do that and then extend Crochet, I can't go any lower than a C, because that's like, if you got the big one. That's what we really wanted. So, the right-handed bat, I think it's going to bug them all year long if they don't get someone to fill in. And then I don't even have any faith of them adjusting at the deadline. They have not shown any ability to add at the deadline in years. And don't even try to talk about the friggin' James Paxton last year. That still pisses me off. So I'm like, I feel like this is an issue with the team. And I'm kind of resigned to, like, we're probably going to have to live with this all year and pray that Christian Campbell catches up to speed unbelievably quick. I think he can do that, but it's a flimsy plan to hang your hat on. So,
well, you're relying on a lot. You're relying on a lot that you didn't see last year. Four things that you didn't see last year. You didn't see Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell produce at the big league level last year, obviously, because they haven't played there. You didn't see Trevor Story produce last year because he barely played. You didn't see Tristan Casas produce last year because he barely played. And you'd be relying heavily on those four things to happen, because last year the offense wasn't good enough. And if one of those guys is good, that's just replacing Tyler O'Neill. So to get better, two of those guys offensively need to be legitimate producers. I think you can pencil Casas in to do that. But now you're relying on Trevor Story, who really hasn't shown much off. Like, he's a productive player, but most of that production is going to come from his defense. And you're relying on Campbell and Roman Anthony to produce as rookies. And that's not easy to do. We saw what Jackson Holliday did last year. And that guy was one of the top, two or three prospects of our lives. And he didn't have success right away. So it's just, I understand that these guys are, we believe in that. Like, oh, don't take this as we don't believe in them. Like, these are going to be future all-stars, at least in my book.
Yeah.
But it's not something that you can, it takes time. You can't, it's like, we want them to contribute next year. And this is from the core's mouth. We want them to contribute next year, but we can't lean on them next year.
And look at the Mets. Brett Beatty was one of the best prospects in baseball. They were saying this is going to be a middle of the order bat for years to come. And he's on the verge of not even being on the major league roster 2.5 years in. So these guys are not guaranteed. I think people, you hear about the prospects for years and years and years from, we have all these great podcasts that talk about them. Everyone's covering the prospects more than they used to. And I think a lot of fans get married to the idea that all these guys are going to pan out. And it's just not, it's not that simple. Even Roman Anthony, the number one prospect in baseball, or number two, if you want to consider Sasaki, either way, top prospect in baseball. He's no guarantee. We don't know. It's hard, man. To rely on these kind of a flimsy plan, I guess, is a nice way to describe it. You didn't have to do it this way.
Yeah, I mean, and you can look at, obviously we don't see it working out like this, but like you look at Detroit and Spencer Torkelson was a guy whose bat was a guarantee to play at the big league level. And now they're signing, what, Gleyber Torres so Colt Keith can play first base. And they're talking about trading Torkelson or him playing in some limited capacity. Like that's where he's at. Mm-hmm. Like you can't count on these guys when you're in a window to be significant contributors before they've done it. Like in 2018, Rafi Devers came up midseason, showed he could produce a little bit, and it was like, all right, like 19 we'll throw him out there and came up in 17 and then 18 we'll throw him out there. And he took his lumps, but he got better, and then 19 he went. And it's like mm-hmm. that's I think what you can hope for. Like that
he was also in 2018, he was also hitting sixth, which is great. That's exactly where I want like my top hitting prospect. You're not eighth or ninth, but you're also not in the middle of the order. You're in a good spot. I don't know, man. It's either you got Trevor Story batting third, or right now Christian Campbell, who has 19 games of AAA experience against lefties, I should say. These are the options against lefties. So I just don't. The frustrating part, like I said, it didn't have to be this way. And it might not be. We still got time left. Yeah. It's not even February. But damn,
they could
man.
Shut us up. That like this, all these discussions come with the like the little asterisk at the beginning and end, where it's like, hey, if they pull out a trade for Seiya Suzuki, I'm not going to complain about not having the right hand bat.
Hey, and another thing that needs to work out is Yoshida, because if they don't move him and he's the DH and he is playing every day, which more I think about it, the more I want that to happen. I'd rather like just give him everyday reps at DH, maybe a little bit in left field, but like he needs to hit too. Because he's your one guy who doesn't strike out every friggin' other at bat. So
one, yeah, you're literally one guy that's above league average in terms of their K percentage.
Yeah, that's not even us exaggerating. There is one guy in the lineup, and he's a guy that we've talked about. Maybe they'll DFA him. That's what's going on with the lineup right now. And granted, if the Red Sox face a right-handed pitcher, I think they will absolutely murder him most of the time. It's just that lefties are such an issue, and I know there's more righties than lefties, but if this team makes the playoffs and it's game one and they're facing a lefty, then you go down 0-1 and you're like, god damn.
Like imagine if you're in a you're in the three game series, the wild card round, and game one is a lefty. So like, okay, it's a stud lefty, it's a lefty ace, all right, we're down one game to none, and it's basically win the next two games or you're going home. So yeah, they're gonna it's a problem that even if they got Alex Bregman, it would still be a problem. Like that's only mm-hmm. step one towards fixing it. Yep. The real solution is getting Vlad in a year. Like I'll say that again, but
yeah. And also like this is not taking away the blame from, you know, Duran, Devers, Casas. They have to produce a little bit against lefties too. Of course, hitting against a left-handed pitcher is not as easy for a left-handed hitter, but still have to do some damage. And I think Devers has been pretty good at that. You know, he's better against righties, of course, but he can hit lefties. Casas need improvement there. Yoshida, oof, God, really need improvement there from last year. That was rough. And then Duran was kind of like average against lefties. So it's not just the right-handed bats that need to do better against lefties. We need left-on-left damage from the lineup as well.
Yep. And one more thing the Red Sox need too is that bullpen arm. And you know that market looked like it was going and going and going. Now we hear that Kirby Yates gets 1 year, 13 mil, could be up to 14 mil from the Dodgers. That's something personally I would have given him a second year just to lock that lockdown dude in. We've seen the Red Sox have success signing older relievers. I'm fine giving 1 or 2 years to older relievers. I would have given him the second year to get him in the door. Because now, and he's basically the most recent stud reliever that has signed. Now that he's gone, he's off the market. Is it Tommy Canley? Is it David Robertson? Is it Carlos Estevez? Is it a trade for someone like Helsley? I guess you can't fully close the door on Kenley Jansen. I wouldn't count on that one. My favorite, I said this on the last pod, I believe I did, is Tommy Canley. I think Pat said his favorite was David Robertson. Curious where your head is at on the bullpen And if it's not one of the guys, because obviously, like, we talk about these names that are left, what would you do if you're not going to get one of those guys?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. I like Canely. Actually, I agree with both you and Pat. Canely and Robertson, I'd be thrilled with either on a short-term deal. Both guys over the age of 35, so would not require much in terms of years. That said, I don't think the Red Sox are landing either of those guys. I don't think they're going to get a premier bullpen arm because, one, of course, we've seen them be a little bit hesitant to spend, and two, they signed Chapman so early on. Like, I feel like if they had a guy that they really wanted, they would have identified him and signed him for the bullpen at least. So, I don't know. I think they're going to get that second or maybe third tier reliever to add to the bullpen, which just, again, is avoidable and disappointing. Your bullpen, not enough people are talking about this. The bullpen got worse.
I don't know if I agree with that.
So the way I look at it is you lost your closer, Kenley, and, you know, he was up and down, but he was a solid closer for most of his time in Boston. You lose him. You lose Chris Martin, who's your most reliable reliever, I think, by far, your most reliable reliever for 2 years in a row. And you are now replacing Jansen with Liam Hendricks, who has not pitched in a meaningful game in two-ish years. He could be great. He could not be great. We don't know. And then you have not really replaced Chris Martin. I guess it would be Chapman in the setup role. He's a lefty, not a righty. But he's like the opposite of Chris Martin. He walks the world and strikes out a lot of guys. Chris Martin doesn't walk anyone. And I much prefer the latter for reliever. Other than that, Justin Wilson, a guy who is more of like a project, not a project, but a guy that they would need to tweak and hope that it works out.
Can I give you my argument, Sammy? I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think it's considerably better right now. I still think they need that last guy to put me in that camp. But the way I see it is you lost Jansen, you lost Martin, but you gained Chapman, you gained Hendricks, and you gained Whitlock. So you're a little bit less top heavy because I agree. Like, out of those three guys, Jansen and Martin, I don't know who I would say is like there's a lot of unknown with Whitlock and Hendricks, but Jansen and Martin might be the best too. But the biggest issue with the Red Sox last year was not having enough depth, and you've got three guys there now, and one of them's a good multi-inning dude in Garrett Whitlock. So you'll have more depth. You'll be able to make it through some more of those middle inning meltdowns that, I mean, they had a lot of those last year where, you know, they couldn't get through the sixth or seventh inning. Like, they couldn't get to Martin in the eighth. And then when Martin was down, they couldn't get to Jansen in the ninth. I think they have a little bit more depth to do that. But again, like, I definitely do think that they need one more arm to really fortify that, because they're one injury away from having, I don't want to say a shallow bullpen, because I'm hoping that guys like Luis Guerrero are reliable. I hope and think that he will be. I think that Zach Kelly's going to have a better year this year. He looked terrific before he kind of got worn down. They pitched him a ton. It was the same thing with Bernardino. Like, these guys looked really good. And then because they had to pitch all the time because they didn't have depth, they got worn down by June, by July, by August. Like, especially you think that Dodgers series, like, that's really where it all started.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was the beginning of the end. And then, by the way, on the topic of Whitlock, that brings us back to everything has to break right. He just had surgery. We've seen guys come back and not look the same. So that's another thing. There's just, I feel like we're back in question mark city a little bit. Like,
oh, we were don't take me back there.
We're headed down there.
They need to get a legitimate, like, there's a lot of relievers on the market, and there's a lot of relievers that you could trade for. Like, you could trade for a guy that you think has upside, or you could sign a lower dollar value guy. But the reason I think you got to aim at the top of the remaining guys in the market is because unless it's a stud, like, you'd be better off having guys that are optionable than a guy on a veteran on a 1 year deal that you're kind of married to being in that bullpen. It was kind of why it was like kind of interesting, I should say, interesting to put it, that they signed Justin Wilson when they did. And maybe he's making so little that it doesn't even matter. And if he doesn't work out, you can DFA him. I guess that could be it. But like, you're now married to that bullpen spot. You can't option that guy. Like, guy, like, you got to find time for guys like Guerrero to come up, for guys like Weissert to come up, for guys like Bernardino and Kelly both have options. Like, the reason you want bullpens to be optional is to get guys the optimal rest they need to make it through a season, the rest that they didn't get last year.
I'm with you, man. What do you think about bringing back Lucas Sims? And I have a reason I'm asking, but I want to get your thoughts on that. Obviously, a guy they acquired from the Reds at the trade deadline, did not pitch well for the Red Sox, but had been solid prior. What do you think about him?
I think it's kind of what I said. I just don't think he's high-end enough. Like, I'd almost rather have that bullpen spot go to a guy that can be optioned, even though they're less proven than Sims. Like, I'd almost rather it go to Guerrero, because at least if he doesn't work out, you can option him and call up Weiser, work on some things, bring him back. Whereas if Sims doesn't work out, you're just kind of stuck running him out there.
Mm-hmm. So here's why I was interested in Sims. And this is, and there's going to be people who will roll their eyes, but these guys all have something in common. Blake Snell, Ryan Pressly, Hunter Green, Joe Musgrove, Luke Weaver, Edwin Diaz, Brian Abreu, Josh Hader, and Yoan Duran all have lesser stuff plus grades than Lucas Sims. So that's just very Andrew Bates. Sorry, Yoan Duran is tied with Lucas Sims. So if you want a cheap option with upside, I'm sure that's why they traded for him in the first place. I mean, Aroldis Chapman ahead of him on this list, close by. So, you know, people laugh at stuff plus. We laugh about stuff plus.
I'm laughing about it right now.
I had my bit last year where I was like, everyone talks about stuff plus. Nobody knows what the fuck it means. Well, now we know what it means. It's like the movement of the pitch. It's pretty broad.
And it doesn't take into account the location. We saw Lucas Sims walk guys. Like, I like Lucas Sims. Don't get me wrong. It's just like, I mean, we saw what we saw. Like,
yeah,
that's what.
Well, I think the Red Sox don't really care about that because they just signed Aroldis Chapman. Who walks more guys.
But he throws 100 billion miles an hour, and it's like, all right, he can walk two guys, and he'll strike out the next three, and it's fine.
But didn't you just say, okay, but I just said he walks a lot of guys, and then you cited his stuff plus.
No, I cited, well, I guess, technically. I mean, everything commits, whatever.
I don't know. I feel like Sims, like, it's I like not, Sims. Nobody
it's
would
nothing
be...
against Sims. It's nothing, yeah. I like him as a pitcher. I just think that they got to aim higher on the market. Otherwise, it's like, get a guy who's optional,
so.
Or just use the guys you have. Because, like, you also got a DFA guy. For every guy you bring in, you got a DFA guy. And it's like, you look at the roster, and it's like, who would you DFA on there? Like,
honestly,
there's,
I don't even know if I would DFA anyone for Sims.
There you go. It's like,
yeah,
to get a, like, you got to have a guy that's considerably more valuable than the guy that you're, and granted, I know that they've been able to trade these guys, but still, like, obviously, like, the guys you're getting are not as valuable as the guys you're giving, but the guys you're giving are in DFA limbo, so you have to take pennies on the dollar.
What about Ryan Stanek?
I'm not a Stanek guy. I've seen that guy vomit on the mound too many times, figuratively. It's literally like the top of the market guys, and I'm not sold. I really am not a big Carlos Estevez guy, but like if you get him on 2 years, I'm fine with it.
I wouldn't complain. I keep saying, don't get Estevez. But at this point, I'm like, oh my God, just make the bullpen better.
2 years or less. Not going 3 years for Estevez, but 2 years or less. Like, screw it.
Oh, yeah, no. Being locked into Estevez for 3 years.
Doesn't miss enough. No. Bass. All right, yeah. Sammy, do you see the time? We got to get to these DMs. I don't even know if we're going to have time for enough said today, but we got to get to the DMs. Joe, you got DMs for us from the we sent out that DM request, and we got a bunch of them.
That is right.
What do we
let's start with this first one here from Tommy. Tommy, this is a little fun one here he's got. So let's say you guys are at spring training, you pick up a bat, you get to pick one of the Red Sox pitchers, and you have 15 tries to try and get a hit off them. You get a hit, you win 100K. Which pitcher are you choosing to face off with?
Sammy, do you hit righty or lefty? Because I hit lefty.
Righty.
Okay. So I'm going to pick a right-handed pitcher. I'm trying to figure out who throws the slowest.
I think I had reverse splits when I was a player. I did not like facing lefties. I felt much more comfortable against righties. I might be a reverse splits guy.
If you felt more uncomfortable against righties, you wouldn't be a reverse splits guy.
No, yeah. No, more comfortable against righties.
Oh, okay,
righties.
Okay.
I liked righties more, yeah.
I see.
I think I would go with... Who would I go with? Crap, that's hard. I'd probably want to go with, like, Garrett Crochet or Tanner Houck just so I could be like, look, I did it. I beat an all-star.
No, because you're not going to beat them. You're going to do that so that when you don't beat them, it's like, oh, well, it was Garrett Crochet.
No, so here's my logic. I think that we are so far away from the skill level of a major league pitcher that it won't really be that much of a difference. Like a good one to a bad one, we're going to be so out of our element, regardless of who it is we're facing, that the odds hardly change depending on who it is. We're dead either way. So I'd rather at least be like, try my odds against someone who's really, really good just so I could say I did it. Or what you just said, I'd be like, wow, it was Garrett Crochet. What the hell am I supposed to do? If you get diced up by an up and down reliever, I'll be like, Gordo, come on, dude. I could have hit him. I could just say that the rest of my life. I could have gotten a hit off of him, and there's never any way to disprove it.
I'm going to go with Wink purely for the reaction that would be on his face if I like roped an opposite field single through the 5.5 throw hole through third and short. I just kind of flick one the other way, jogging around first base, and he's just like,
Do you think it would be, for us I'm talking about, not for a major league hitter, but for us, do you think there's a big difference between Josh Winkowski and like Garrett Crochet?
For us?
I feel like we're...
It would look ridiculous no matter what.
Yeah, we're not going to notice the difference. Our untrained eye as the player, like when we're watching on TV, sure, but in the batter's box, we're not going to notice the difference. We're going to be like, nope, we'll see one pitch and be like, okay, next challenge.
Yeah.
Taking Crochet.
All right, Samuel face Crochet. I'll face Wink. I'll go. What did he say? We have 15 chances, so I'll go 7 for 15. Samuel go 0 for 15. I'll take home by 100K, or maybe it's 700K if I'm getting it for every hit I get. I mean, I'm getting close to 500 off Winky.
I'm even putting my reverse splits on the line. I'm going with the tougher matchup. Look at
you, man. No, I'm just kidding. I couldn't touch Wink. What am I talking about?
I'm destroying Crochet's confidence for the season. Sorry about it.
All right, Joe, I'm making the executive decision. We're skipping Nuff Said today. Can we get another one of these? There were so many, and I saw a bunch of them.
Yes, this one maybe not as fun as the one we just did. So this is from Johnny here. He says, not to beat a dead horse, but shouldn't John Henry be criticized more for his lack of media availability? And then he goes on to say that Steve Cohen's explanation on the Alonso negotiations seemed to get a positive reception from the fans. Some transparent communication from ownership about the Bregman pursuit or lack thereof would be nice.
I literally never, ever, ever want to hear any of the Red Sox ownership guys talk, because as transparent as Steve Cohen was, I feel like the Red Sox ownership is basically incapable of doing that at this point. So every time they talk, and Gordo's probably sick of hearing me say this, it means absolutely nothing to me. They could tell me that my house is on fire, and I'd be like, yeah, okay, you're probably lying. So I don't care at all about hearing them talk. I'm making my own judgments nowadays. I don't need those guys.
I think the truth is, and you saw it there with the Mets fans, and like props to them. Like David Stearns, they were asked, like, something happened with Alonso. Stearns gave his answer, and the fans booed because they didn't like the explanation. And then Cohen was like, hold on. I'm going to tell you, like, exactly from my standpoint, like, what is going on here? And he was honest. He gave an explanation of the team's direction. He said why he's not a fan of how the negotiations are proceeding. And he got a good reaction from the fans. And it's almost like, oh, if you're honest with your fan base, like a group of smart people, like Mets fans are smart people. Red Sox fans are very smart fans. If you are just honest with them, explain the direction, literally lay it all out there. Like there's no competitive disadvantage to saying we're in a rebuild. Like we need to build. If you want to see a World Series, this is what we have to do to get there. But for whatever reason, the Red Sox ownership and the Red Sox front office through this rebuild, it almost felt like they were instructed that they needed to sell the illusion of contention. And that's why it pisses people off when you say you're going to do all these things and then you don't do it. Because Sammy, I agree with you. Like they have this ownership group, when they speak, they have not earned the right to be trusted. They haven't earned that, and they've proven that they shouldn't be trusted when they speak. But at the same time, like when they do speak, people do listen, and like they have to be held accountable for what they say. And if they were honest with what they said, and told the truth and explained the direction, people would respect it. Like, yeah, maybe your short-term ticket sales would be down, but like look how much. And like this, well, going on a long time ago at this point, but the 76er fans with trust the process, like They literally sold trust the process to those people, and they bought in. Like, it's not that crazy. Like, you don't have to say we're tanking. Just say, like, listen, like, we're, like, and Breslow did it at the end of last offseason. Like, he said, like, we're not going to sacrifice future wins for present wins. But just be consistent. If the ownership group is consistent, they deliver the message and they deliver the direction and they're honest and then they execute it, people are going to respect it. But with how they've talked and operated, it's been two different things. They say one thing, they do another. And so they've lost people's trust. And I think they could learn a lot from what Steve Cohen did this weekend and how the fans reacted to it. That's just my take on it.
I wonder if they can even get to that point where, like,
they'll say something
and fans will believe them and respect it. I feel like they've burnt so many bridges. They've burnt an entire city's worth of bridges at this point.
It would take a lot. It would take, because it would take more than just like one off season of telling the truth. Because, like, let's say they tell the truth next off season and say they're going to do a bunch of shit and then do a bunch of shit. It's like, then the next off season comes around and they say it again. And it's like, all right, well, they were good on their word last year, but they were bad on their word the last 2 years. So I don't know. We don't have time for like a full on nuth said. We really do got to wrap this thing up, but any final thoughts on the way out of here, Sammy?
No, I'll save mine for the next time.
All right. My final thought is I just don't like that the MLB The Show cover has three guys on it. Wish they'd just kept it to one. Like, I love all the three guys. I wish they just picked one. Three guys on the cover that have nothing to do with each other. Just kind of weird to me. One pitcher, two hitters. Like, none of them on the same team or have any sort of relation to each other or, like, have ever been friends or anything. It's just weird to me. That's my...
Fully agree. Yeah. Less impactful, less meaningful. I think it's cool to have a cover guy each year. It's a big honor. And this just feels less important with three guys.
Yeah.
Three unrelated guys, too, like you said.
That said, I will be getting the game. Big MLB The Show guy. Love the game and we'll be playing a ton of it. And if I like to, like, put some sort of, like, I used to put, like, my Twitter logo. I'll probably do it again, even though my face is covering it now. So I don't even know if, like, people would recognize it anymore. But I'll like, make my uniform logo, like, my Twitter logo. So, like, if anyone, like, knows me from Twitter, like, I've had people DM me over PlayStation. It's like, hey, I love the account, man. Like, after I like lose like 15-2 and MLB The Show to them. But yeah, so can't wait for MLB The Show to come out in like a month and a half. But yeah, wish they'd done something different with the cover. But we got a wrap there because we've got somehow, dude, usually the podcast with the two of us, when it's like two voices, it's like you say so much more in so much less time. But we ran long today. But I mean, there's always just so much. Every time we think there's not that much to talk about with the Sox, there always is. We just can't stop talking Sox. Woo! But that'll do it for episode 174 of Play Tessie. Before you get out of here, listen to something else. Go about your day. Get back to work, whatever. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. All of your platforms. Subscribe everywhere. Rate 5 stars. It helps us so much when you do it. Leave a comment. Tell us what you think. Find us on YouTube on the WEI channel where you can subscribe there. Can find the Play Tessie playlist there, has all of our episodes, and hit the thumbs up on the video if you haven't already. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. And find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Find all sorts of clips from our shows. We'll be doing player content at spring training and during the season. You won't want to miss it. But for episode 174, for Sammy, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here for Play Tessie. Thanks for tuning into this one, guys. Peace.